Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. I'm very excited. I'm Veronica Entwistle. A lot of you are familiar with this show. And I'm very excited to present Paul Babcock, who's going to take us on an expansive, wild ride into the world of energy. And it's not some of the energies that we're used to, which is through Tai Chi and all that. It's much, he has a much more powerful and enriching awareness of energy way beyond anything that I've experienced. And it's for healing, for comprehension, and for creating our reality, and so on and so forth. And you, welcome to the show, Paul Babcock.
Oh, thank you, Veronica.
You're an electronics wizard. You're an electrical engineer by trade, or not by trade, by training, right?
Yeah, I actually became an electronic technician way back in the 70s, and, you know, I always had a flair for it. I started out, about 10 years old, I got this fascination with it, and my hobby turned into a career, and I just went and got a two-year technical degree, but I'm a self-taught engineer.
Oh, wow.
As I went out into industry, and I got really good at it and became a very, very high-level engineer, and I traveled the world. I've worked for tiny little companies of three people to some of the biggest corporations in the world, you know, as a master troubleshooter and problem solver, and, you know, that's what I did for many, many years.
And there's also a part of you that then moved into understanding what we call the ether, right? Understanding the etheric.
Yeah, very much.
The etheric, relationship to energy, is that right?
Yeah, very much so, and that even started early in life. I really, you know, always had psychic abilities, and you know how we all grow up in the world that's, you know, society doesn't really accept that, but I would never give it up, but I always had this tremendous interest, so I was reading Fate magazine and having lots of experiences in childhood, and then I really started studying etheric energy and whatnot when I started reading Wilhelm Reich in junior high and started experimenting with his work.
His Orgone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was really a parallel development, you know. I've, you know, had a very intense interest in nature and animals and life and spirituality and psychic phenomenon and my electronics and technical stuff all at the same time. So it all kind of evolved throughout my life together in this parallel process.
Isn't that wonderful? And you've done some amazing experiential things like living out in nature, totally in nature, have you not? And
oh, yes, absolutely. I've always, you know, for a guy who's lived high-tech, I always had to find balance by going out in nature. So I lived many years in the Alaska bush. I've been in the jungles and the tropics. And I sometimes even quit my job and go out for years at a time and live in the bush and live in the jungle and live on the ocean and swim with the dolphins and the whales and live off the land. And, you know, and I've always been involved with native culture all through North America and the Pacific. And, you know, so it was this learning process, and that finding that balance was absolutely necessary to my life. I couldn't live without one or the other. It was kind of, if I focused on the high tech and the science, and along the way it taught me the, you know, how our belief system and science is very flawed, you know, and nature's taught me more than science has ever taught me.
So talk about it being flawed. What does that mean? Is it like the confinements of a definition of electricity, for example?
Well, that and just the lack of understanding that consciousness is the basic building block of the universe, the denial of consciousness, the denial of the soul, you know, trying to define things with the five senses without understanding that we have many more senses, trying to fit something that's outside that range of senses and trying to make that fit and using that as your only standard to understand life and existence. And I'm a science guy. I love science, but I also understand its limitation.
Mm-hmm.
And I try not to let those limitations interfere with my thinking process. So I look at it this way, you know, reason is, like I said in my talk at the energy conference, reason and intuition are each other's handmaiden. One is less without the other. And that's really what I've learned through life.
That's actually really important because not a lot of people consider that of the same value, right?
Exactly. And that's what we are as human beings. We were given our brain and our, you know, our intelligence and our reasoning and our creative abilities. But if you don't understand what's behind it all, where we come from, why we're here, what we really are as fully physical and spiritual beings, that's this beautiful biological spiritual combination that just is an incredible thing. If you deny the better half of that, and people who are totally intuitional and deny reason become victims of superstition, and they aren't able to cope in our physical world. So finding that balance makes you a much stronger, better human being.
And so learning to follow a lot of your intuitive aspects. When you were out in the bush, talk about that a little bit. Did you learn to kind of be in sync with animals? You know, we hear people doing that, or plants, or weather, or... what did you learn?
Well,
the energetic
stuff? Everything and anything. You know, if you want to know how to live, watch the animals, you know. And, you know, I grew up in a reservation town with rancher family and all that. So I was pretty much into nature and everything. But I really learned that the cycle of life is not Darwinistic and competitive. That animals, it's really this incredible cooperation right down to the cellular level. And I had so many experiences as a hunter and a fisherman. And, you know, I always seemed to be in the time of need, man. Mother Nature would answer and give me something to eat, you know, and learn to share in community with that cycle of life. And I learned so much from the natives in Alaska about their view on, you know, how nature works, and actually saw it in operation. You know, I had many experiences where literally I'd be hunting, you know, in need, and animals would literally, they would literally give me their life so I could continue on in life. A very humbling experience. And when you experience that on a spiritual level and a telepathic level with an animal who just gave his life to you so you could live, you're never the same after that.
Wow. And, I mean, that's really empowering. Only it's also, like you said, humbling. Is it hard to actually kill an animal at that point?
Oh, if you take a life of any kind and it doesn't hurt, there's something wrong with you. But it's a strange mixture. I can't even call it strange if you haven't experienced it. It's joy and hurt and sadness all at the same time. Mm-hmm. You knew you'd take a life, but you also know life is going to continue. And that's how nature works. It's this, you know, we're all light beings, and we all gather up this energy that the Mother Earth and the Sun create for us, and we all exchange that. And in a biological world, there has to be this exchange of life. It's what we call Mother Nature. There's everything's spirit is totally unharmed and untouched, and we all take part in this cycle, and we come and go through it. And everything gets recycled, and the bio life and that energy is built up over time. And it's actually it's a light, it's a living force, it's the prana, it's the orgone, and it builds up, and it's the basis of everything in nature. And it's a vastly cooperative effort. Cells in the tree communicate with the cells in your body, and everything works to maintain this nature's balance. Even cells have souls, and they come and go in your body all the time, and you don't really realize it. But it's this vast cooperative effort of consciousness to maintain the biological network.
And so could you actually see that yourself? You could see it?
Yeah, you actually feel it. And the other thing is when you get kind of in tune with nature, and I've had this experience many a time, you can literally enter the consciousness. When you expand your consciousness, you can literally be part of the tree. Mm-hmm. And it's something very much I learned from native culture. And even with animals and fish, like I was in the tropics, and I'll never forget this experience. I was out spearfishing to feed myself, and here I speared a couple of little fish, and I'm eating this fish, and all of a sudden, while it's in my body, I literally could feel from the inside out the life of the fish. these incredibly peaceful creatures, and just I felt the fish as a living being as I ate the flesh of the fish. And that's how so many native peoples have lived since the beginning of time, and that's something we really could get back to as a culture. And we'd have a lot more respect for life, and we'd be a lot less hard on Mother Nature if we really did that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And like, it kind of slows you down instead of this, I've got to do this, got to rush, got to externally.
Yeah, it gives you more respect. Yeah, and you become much more discriminating about how you take life and how you use life. And there's no immorality about taking life to live,
mm-hmm.
as long as you stay within the context of nature. And I can't
tell
you how many
cycle,
times I've
right?
said this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Like people, you know, how many times I've sat down with people and they're munching on a big steak and I say, did you say thank you to the cow? And they look at me like I'm nuts, you know. Because they really don't feel that sense of obligation. You know, the cow gave his life for you. Show some thank yous and internalize that. You know, someday you'll give your life back to nature, you know. But it always requires a thanks, you know. And that's why my thing of prayer is a need when it comes to what we need in life. Prayer is a need are much more powerful than prayers of want, you know,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the cycle of life.
That's a really good bit
and
of teaching.
Yeah, and it's quite real. I mean, it's very, very real. And I watched a lecture by a Jesuit priest who, he went to Alaska in the mid-50s, you know, to all enthused about the church and Christianity, and he went to teach
the heathens,
yeah, to about God and life, you know. And he tells this story of they were doing the blanket toss, and the blanket toss has spiritual meaning to the native peoples on the north, you know, on the ocean. They're whale hunters, right? So he walked up to one of the elders, and I think I told this story in my lecture, and asked, and he said, oh, you're doing the blanket toss so you can see the whales when they come. And the elder turned to him and said, no, we do the blanket toss so the whales can see us.
Oh.
And sure enough, this whale separated from the herd and came in close and gave its life to the people. And it's a very spiritual and joyous event. I mean, you know, the same thing. It hurts to take the whale's life, but yet at the same time, it gives them a life. You know, they would all die and starve if it wasn't for the gift of the whale. And it's literally one of the whales goes and gives its life. And he watched this year after year after year. And by the time he left, he'd realized that he was way more of a heathen than they were, and they had a lot more to teach him about spirituality than he had to teach them.
So he became a convert, did he?
Well, he still believed in, you know, and they exchanged the spiritual ideas, and he brought a little Christianity and stuff to them, but he learned far more from them about the cycle of life, the spiritual nature of life. You know, from them, from the nature's point of view, and people that have to live that way. And he was a changed and transformed human being, and then he went out and lectured on it, and very, very powerful lectures. And I had the same experiences, you know, what the native people taught me, and, you know, and I used to laugh so much because, you know, when the oil companies and modern life came to those regions of the world, I spent many years working at the oil patch in the North Slope and places like that. So I knew a lot of the natives anyway. And so native time and industrial time, you know. So I knew this guy, he was a foreman on a job, and he had some... They were always required to hire some natives in the work so that, you know, so they could make some money and improve their life and everything. But, you know, he was in the middle of a job, and all of a sudden, you know, all the natives, they just all dropped their tools at the same time and says, up, the caribou are moving, it's time to go hunting, you know. And the guy about flipped out, lost his mind. What do you mean you're dropping everything right in the middle of the job and you're going hunting? How do you know the caribou are coming? And they just turned to him and said, they told us. Yeah. And they walked off the job and went hunting because they were so in tune with all the living creatures that, you know, on a telepathic level, they knew when it was time to go and be a part of that cycle. And, you know, that's how they lived. That was their sense of time. And industrial time was totally foreign to them.
Well, it still is to a lot of us who live in it, too. Were you capable of living in that kind of harmony, or are you?
Well, no matter where I'm at, I try to stay in harmony. I've learned to adapt to both worlds. You know, when I'm a working guy and I've got a company to run and all that stuff, I have to live by industrial time. But nature is always with me, and I try to find the balance between two ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are an industrial culture, and technology is basically our culture's form of art and science, you know. And so once you understand one, I think, you know, a society has to go through some serious transformations here. It's absolutely a necessity right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really evolving, and we're seeing that happen now. And I'm just honored to be a part of it. And after a lifetime of learning what I know, I basically kept a lot of my life kind of silent, and I don't really haven't talked about it publicly except for the last few years. But now I really feel this urge and sense to come out and share what I know and have learned.
I'm in total agreement with you. Also, you've developed, or you're in even cohorting with some other people, developing some incredible electronic influence machinery. You want to talk about that?
Yeah,
out of nature, but we know you're an electronics wizard already, so.
Yeah, so I've really, you know, I've been involved. You know, the spirit struck me, you know, basically I got, you know, the invisible hand reached down and touched me years ago when I was in kind of a real low part of life, and, you know, I wasn't having a lot of success, and I'd been hurt in an accident and failed romances. And one of those periods in time, if I'd have had no luck, if it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have had any luck at all.
Mm.
And I'd always had total interest in Tesla and all the, you know, different research. And being an electronics head, I was always looking for this opening, because I'd seen phenomena in my work career and other experiments I'd done where I'd see these bursts of energy that couldn't be accounted for. And lo and behold, you know, I've got, and to make a long story short, I'd listened to a radio interview with Joseph Newman and read his books, and he really opened my eyes to some very fundamental things about electricity, and the search was on. You know, at that moment, you know, I said, man, I'm the guy for this job to figure this out. And all of a sudden, this voice boomed in and says, okay, you know, are you going to take that on? I said, yeah. And all of a sudden, my life just got better, turned around. So that's where my free energy research and magnetics research evolved over about 30 years. And that's pretty much what I've been out in the public talking about, and left the rest of what I'm learning and dealing with in life out of it. So that led to a lot of electronic experimentation and build, and I put my electronics expertise to the mastery of magnetic phenomena and came a long way with it, and, you know, pretty much proven out the theories and everything. Of course, dealing with the industrial world and the other in society has been the big challenge, you know. I mean, it's been thwarted at every turn as far as, like, all the other inventors, you know, out
mm-hmm.
there.
Yeah, that's scary,
but
isn't it?
But the deal is what I learned along the way is like I said in my talk, just providing free energy to people so they have cheaper and free electricity so they can watch more TV and not change themselves is not, you know, then I really haven't accomplished much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because to master this new energy, to master, you know, ether physics and all that, requires us to upgrade our character somewhat and come to a better spiritual understanding of how life and the life system works.
So talk about ether, because this is really relevant to your whole life and our whole conversation, because you've got a different...
Yeah, and that's why, you know, there's a lot of zero-point energy and ether physics, and, you know, and that is only, you know... That's only one aspect of the universal medium. And so I call it the universal medium because everything, I don't care what dimension, what time, what space, it's all a construct of the universal medium. everywhere, and the universal medium is composed of God consciousness. Consciousness is absolutely the basic building block of everything, all realities, all times, all spaces. And it's, I guess you could call it particleized God if you want to use the term particles. And it's, I've wrestled with these concepts for many, many years, and it's always been a challenge to present it to three-dimensional beings, mm-hmm. but the ether is one aspect of the universal medium. Zero-point energy is another, you know, the sea of energy, but it's more than that. It's a reactive, conscious, alive medium.
And what does that mean? It reacts to what?
Mm-hmm. Reacts to us. We're reality creators, right? So mm-hmm. when we project our thoughts out, we're literally creating our reality around us every second of the day, and it's all based on our beliefs and how our thinking and what we believe we are, what we think we are, is exactly what happens to you. And so it's such an incredible system that we always feel like reality creates us rather than us creating reality. And for us to take on our true heritage is to understand the fact that we're totally responsible for the world we create, because the universal medium is what it is. There's no such thing as time and space. That's how it works. Time and space are root assumptions of the species. So we have our root assumptions that are our framework that we use in this three-dimensional world that's really a creation. And so as it's a totally reactive medium. So we are responsible for everything. Everything, how our world works, how our personal lives work, and it's a very challenging thing, right? And it's,
well, sometimes the conundrum is, how could I have created this whole world which is beating each other up and sucking the life force out of the water and so on, you know? How could I have I agree with you that we create our reality. But there's a big thing here.
Yeah, well,
there?
We have mass. Mm-hmm. We have our mass reality and our individual realities. Mm-hmm. And it's all been the challenge for centuries upon centuries. And literally, people, the other thing aspect is people just think of themselves as here in the here and now, and they don't realize that they're so much more than they are. We all operate in the dream world. We're actually souls who operate in multidimensional mediums. And we go in the dream world, we decide what we're going to do as civilizations, we come together as souls, and we have these plans to build civilizations, and our challenges, and our learning, and all this winds up manifesting itself in our living, conscious, waking world. And so you really have to understand that we're incarnational beings, that we're actually, all incarnations are simultaneous. Everything is a eternal now, and that we come and go in this life and we choose different lives, and we're all in this process of building our civilization together as souls through the centuries. Hmm. And it's just not we're born, you know, we born into this world and we make our contributions or our challenges and then we go away. It's a much bigger plan. We have to look at ourselves as a group of souls rather than just biological beings who are born and die, and mm-hmm. the generations come and the generations go. We're much more than that.
Well, how can we access the power of that? How can we access the power of that? And I know you have a different... So talk about ether, because ether is used differently in the way the science conference, you know, the normally
yeah.
the way I've heard it. But I like it very much, and it helps us understand.
Most people look at ether as just an energy field without consciousness.
Right.
You know, and that's the zero point aspect, that, hey, we can tap the sea of energy and manifest it in different ways into our physical universe, and that's all great. But the ether is conscious medium. It's conscious and it's reactive, and it reacts to us. It's what I talk about, you know. And I have to kind of go back where I really got turned on to all this stuff was one of the most amazing events in my life when I was 19. And the Seth and Jane Roberts material found me. I didn't find it.
Hmm.
And I really was having a lot of psychic experiences. And I'd had lots of these experiences in childhood. But, you know, as we go up through our teens, we get distracted, kind of forget you're involved in the social belief systems. And I started having intense psychic experiences, especially astral projections. And, of course, I was a 19-year-old Cretan college kid who was, you know, beer 101, girls 101, you know.
But also and, pretty smart, pretty smart person, too.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I just never was cut from the same cloth as most people I grew up with, and all of a sudden I just said the most, and it scared me to death, man. So I was sitting in my easy chair after class, sitting under the swamp cooler. I lived in Phoenix; it was really hot, and all of a sudden I found myself falling out of my body and looking up, and I'm staring at my body from my astral body sitting on the floor staring up at my body, and then just the fear hit, and the next thing I know I got flashback in my body, and I go, oh my God, did I do too many drugs? What's going on? What's this all about? And all of a sudden this voice, you know, and booms in my head, you need to go read a book. You need this book. And literally at that moment I found myself standing on my feet, and it was like there was this 100-mile-an-hour wind blowing out my back at my back, and he says, go to the Circle K, which is about 3 blocks down the road from me. So the next thing I know, I'm out the door with this 100-mile wind at my back blowing me down the street, and I walked into the door of the Circle K, and I turned around at the book counter or at the bookshelf there, and there was this little blue book, The Education of Oversoul 7.
Aha.
By Jane Roberts. Never seen of it, never heard of it, had not a clue who Jane Roberts was or any of it. And then so the second I picked up that book, the wind quit blowing, and I knew I had this book, you know, had this book in my hand, and I was meant to read it. So I went and bought it and went home, and I read that book, and in a matter of 24 hours, I was completely my belief system totally transformed. It was the ultimate answer to my questions, man. It just put me on a path, and I was 19 years old when this happened.
Wow.
And it put me on this path, and I knew that this material was something I could trust. I just knew that I was a part of the story. I just knew it was real. And all of a sudden, you know, life and death, astral projections, who we are as spirit beings, how we interact with each other in the dream world, and all that just became a part of my life. You know, I still was a 19-year-old Cretan, but
I love that book.
Suddenly,
I read that book when I was quite young, and I loved it. It's just great.
Yeah, and it was totally transformative for me. And and then the story even gets better. I'd read it in the next 3 weeks. I'd read it a number of times, and I just kept getting more and more out of it. And I'm looking at the cover, and it said, based on the teachings of Seth. And I just thought to myself, who is this Seth guy, right? The next thing you know, same thing. Boom, you need to go to the public library. The next thing you know, same thing. I'm on my feet. This wind blowing at my back. It felt like my feet weren't even touching the ground. And I lived about 7-8 blocks from the Phoenix Library, easy walk, and the big downtown library. And you know, boom, I'm on the way to the library. I walk into this huge library built like, you know, big columns, real Romanesque construction, and just hallway after, you know, just rows and rows and rows of books. And down this thing I went almost to the end, made a hard right, the wind blew me hard right, and down the aisle I went, and then I got spun around again, and there was the Seth material staring me right in the face.
Wow.
And I pulled it out, read about 2 pages, and I was just stunned, and I went and got a library card and checked that book out, and, you know, then it was on, you know, and I've been studying that material my whole life, and it's incredibly advanced material, and I just knew that I could trust it as a guideline. And so as I learned the material and as I grew as a human being, and it took me a long time to be able to actually absorb the advanced material, but I've been reading it for, you know, well, since I was 19,
Are you still reading it?
He's highly underrated.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as that as a help, as some material I could trust, it really opened my eyes to the nature of what we really are. And the deal is I got to practice and experience it before I ever had to accept it. As I grew and grew, I could suddenly absorb more and more of the advanced material, and it just has been an incredible thing for me to have to and my understanding of life. And then when I was out in nature and, you know, dealing with life and dealing with people and technology, it all became this integrated thing, and I always had this root base, and the joy and the advantage it gave me in life, I just can't express enough. And really, so much of what I understand spiritually was that material that brought it into my awareness and consciousness on this level, and it went down into my subconscious, and then through life I was able to actually find the truth of it. I didn't have to accept anything, but my experiences in nature and all my life and working with people, all that material, you know, I started, you know, it was proven in my life of how it really worked, you know. And then, you know, my psychic abilities expanded and grew tremendously. I began to understand. And then all this, you know, then all the other material, the Tesla and the Reich and the Russell and all these other great men that wrote all these books really helped me. And then my own experiences with all that material to help me along really gave me a real great view and a real understanding without a lot of distortion of how life in the system works and what the ether really is. And the ether is a living medium.
And is that what you're calling the universal medium, or is that just part of it?
The universal medium. Yeah, mm-hmm. The universal medium is reactive consciousness. It's literally God consciousness particleized and put into this medium, and it's what we're all built up. Everything is built of it, associated of it, and it can be everything at once. You know, and it's so our planet, our structure, space-time is all products of consciousness that are projected upon a universal medium, and consciousness is virtually everything. The grid network of the Earth, the grid network of space, the structure, there's actually a pyramidal structure of intersecting lines that are a product of consciousness that are actually the support network for three-dimensional reality, and other consciousness built and created this three-dimensional world for us to be involved in as a medium for us to grow and experience this biological experience. And it's just this incredibly magical thing. And every last thing, to the smallest subatomic particle, to atoms, to our physical life, or instantaneous materializations from projections of consciousness across the universal medium.
And so you're saying that it happens anyway, even if you're not sitting down to plan it, it's just going to happen. Whatever you're radiating and thinking and being is going to manifest.
Exactly. And it's this incredible thing that just, and it's such a beautiful thing that when we come into this life, our life is given to us. It's a gift by Creator, a no strings attached gift to use as we see fit. And the only nickel we pay, as I've heard it said in some of the Seth material, is we fully accept it as a reality. So we are here in this three-dimensional world. We fully accept it. Our soul is fused with this biological mechanism, and it becomes our reality. And so that's how we can experience and totally focus here for our lessons and our learning and our play and our fun and our creative. And we're learning to be conscious co-creators with the big holy. I mean, it's that simple, and this is the medium that's been provided for us to do that, to express and use and understand the ramifications of our creative energy. We are creative beings. We are reality creators.
And we do have God consciousness within ourselves, don't we? Some.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Not only did he create the universal medium, but he granted us all awareness and self, you know, to never be taken from us. We always have been, we always will be. You know, our three-dimensional time and our time and space network, we're actually beings outside of that. There is no such thing as time or space, but the time and space framework is our learning ground, our playground. We're like the sea otters of the universe, another Seth quote. Like, we're here to have fun, play, create, you know, our failures.
Well, it sure seems like a lot
of
work.
The learning process.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it does. Well, it's also a lot of fun, right? So, you know, work hard, play hard. And I kind of live that way spiritually and physically, too, you know.
I like that.
So,
jump
felt
into the machines.
Blessed.
You're creating machines, and you've got the etheric and all your harmony with nature and so on, so deep and so broad and so on. But here we are creating machines. So let's talk about that part of your life.
See, and that's, so technology is basically our particular civilization's art form. And you would think, and as I said in my talk, you know, technology is basically an imitation of talents we already have. And as we decided as a group of souls who decided we were going to build this civilization, we were going to all incarnate through lifetimes and build a new civilization and new thing, we decided to basically give up some of our abilities so we could find and take on and create a technological civilization. And that part of it is, so technology is literally an art form. It's our particular art form, and we're good at it, and we're getting better at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we did this as a civilization purposely. And so now and the challenges of creativity. So here we've created this civilization. We've created all this technology. We've gotten better and better at it from the first rock we ever broke a net with to now we nuclear power and all this other stuff, and now we're having to face the consequences of our creative abilities, right, as a civilization.
Yeah,
look at all
bet.
The challenges we're facing, you know. So now our part of our creative process, now we're seeing what we've created, this tremendous power. We've learned that we can create technology. Now we have to face the consequences, and that's part of our growth process.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going back to our spirit. We have to go back to the roots of our knowing that we actually purposely forgot. Now we have to find that again in order for us to go to the next stage and to be able to handle the kind of creations we're creating. You know, and the stakes are high. You know, we could destroy ourselves in a heartbeat. Amazingly, we haven't, you know.
Well, I do remember you speaking about how animals are disappearing, or, you know, certain plants just aren't happening in the normal seasons, and the richness of the seasons are...
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's why, you know, what I was talking about, how the atmosphere and the life force and how orgone is actually created is the weather system and the electric nature of the universe. This, like I said, the sun and the earth are literally lovers, and their purpose is to create this this energy field, this life force energy, for the purpose of biological existence, so souls can experience this fusion of biology and spirit together, which is a totally ecstatic, thick process that not all souls are really adapted to, but it's this beautiful thing that we're able to hear in this medium, this biological medium that challenges us in ways that we can't be challenged any other way. You know, we have to breathe. We have to deal with food and water and all this, the maintenance of our biology. And that really gives us this medium. And we're here to, you know, we've learned about physical matter and the construction. And we still got a long ways to go of how it's all created. And now we finally reached the point to where now we can take it to the next level. And what's going on now is the consciousness that's out of touch with spirit, that, you know, and I call it, a lot of it is the downside of science, who have denied consciousness and look at consciousness as a product of flesh rather than flesh being a product of consciousness, who are literally assaulting the planet. And
right.
We're literally in a battle for possession of the planet. And there's dark forces out there, that spiritual dark forces that they were allied with. And, you know, now we're in the battle for our life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what they're doing is they're destroying the life force generating mechanism of the earth, which is and it's an electrical process that exists between the ionosphere and the surface of the earth. We live in this giant capacitor, and once you understand capacitors and dielectric medium, then you get into the Tesla physics of how electricity really works. And so there's so many people in science that, you know, secretive agencies and secretive organizations that understand this, but they've literally sided with the wrong side, and now they've tried to keep us ignorant about this life-generating process, how orgone really works, you know, what they did. You know, Wilhelm Reich died in prison for what he knew.
Oh, he did? I didn't realize that. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and so how it works is the sun, the sun's energy, the solar winds strike the surface of the atmosphere, and they create this positive charged layer of incredible energy. And the Earth's surface is a negative side, charged electrical surge. And there's tremendous amounts energy in the atmosphere is the dielectric of a capacitor. And if you know how electronics work, you have two plates, a charged plate and a negative plate with an insulated material in between it. Well, electron flow doesn't work through an electronic medium. It's what we call longitudinal wave propagation. And that's what Tesla discovered. So when you go to learn classical electronic physics, they teach you about electrostatics and magnetics, and they'll tell you that's all there is to electricity. Well, Tesla realized that this exists in the fluid, the ether, and the electricity is only half, that it's actually E and M, and electrons are actually what you call, regulators of three-dimensional reality. They actually regulate and control ether physics to keep to keep the energy balance and the three-dimensional system in place. And you learn how to manipulate electrons and expose the ether and exploit the ether. And that's the other half of electrical physics that's been totally denied us. I don't care what university you go to, where you learn it, you're only going to learn the one half. Tesla figured out the other half, that it's this fluid that electrons and molecules exist in, that are they're all mixed in with this fluid, and they actually translate the fluid into E and M, or magnetic flux and electrostatic flux, and how all the atoms stay together. They're all stitched together through the electrostatic and magnetic lines of force, and that's the function of electrons, is to maintain this three-dimensional reality and not let the ether manifest except in a very slow, controlled way. And so Tesla started manipulating and learning how to manipulate electrons to where he could interrupt that process and actually manifest the ether. Well, that's what happens. Mother Nature does that exactly the same way. And it does it through just charged the dielectric medium. We live inside this gigantic capacitor, and so what he found was, is in space, energy doesn't transmit as electrons. It's actually waves that travel through the ether fluid, and those waves are resonating and ringing, and it's an incredibly powerful field, and that's the field that life is tuned to. And the ether physics half of Tesla's theory is actually the physics that biology uses. That's its energy source. And it manifests in many ways. In the weather system and the cloud system, especially cumulus clouds, are actually designed to produce orgone energy, which is an ether manifestation that exists between the ether and three-dimensional physics.
But and we're losing orgone energy. Are the clouds are the clouds less productive than they were then? Is that what you're saying as well?
Well, here's that's what I was talking about with the chemtrails and the assault on. So basically, we have science and these men of science who are given their life force over to the dark energies. They don't look at themselves as spirit beings. They despise life. And science has really taught them that, you know, and a lot of them don't believe that they're conscious beings and that we're all meat puppets, and it gives them this. They don't believe that we existed before we ever got here, and they don't believe we exist after we leave, and they don't believe in the soul or the timeless nature of the soul, and it's left them as wounded and flawed beings.
So why would they want to run chemtrails? What's the motivation? Just vengeance?
Well, chemtrails basically do a lot. So what the chemtrails do is they interrupt this natural process of the Earth and the orgone generation system. So when you watch chemtrails, and when my video gets published here in August or September, if you watch my talk about how they work, you'll see what they do when they lay those chemtrails in the atmosphere, and then they modulate them with scalar waves. They literally destroy cumulus cloud formation, and they interrupt this natural dielectric process that generates the life medium that we all depend on as biological beings.
Pretty scary. And so the results are, what, the planet's suffering, right?
The planet is suffering, and when the planet suffers, we suffer. And it's an assault. It's an assault on all living things, especially us. And we're literally in a battle for the planet. And the thing that fixes it is awareness. Now, there's technology, and what I've learned through what I know about Lakovsky and his machines, the last couple of years I've been heavily experimenting with that, is that there's ways we could use technology to counter a lot of it. But truly, as reality creators, we're much more powerful. We create the weather. The weather, our psychic nature, and what we're always broadcasting into the atmosphere builds up energy. It affects the medium. And as reality creators, every one of us is more powerful than an atom bomb. And our reality creating powers are always in play 24/7, no matter what you do. And if we take hold of that, we, as human beings, find our awareness and start taking responsibility, we can help fix this planet and bring all this to an end.
Well, responsibility means paying attention to what you're feeling and what you're radiating out there, or pulling it back in and going,
mine. And not being BS'd by the belief system. You know, we've been denied knowledge, you know, and this is the most important knowledge we could ever have, is take responsibility as reality creators, because literally you are brought a scalar wave, light level broadcasting all the time. And what we've been taught is to totally focus through biological senses rather than our astral senses, which are always in play. We're overlayered at all times. We're looking out through our astral eyes. We have our astral senses. We have many, many more senses than just the five senses. And once you learn to see you can see it all. We're light beings. You can see the light. You can see everything and our effects on it, you know. And our mass consciousness is all important. So when individuals start ringing and vibrating together, and where we take control of our mass consciousness as human beings, and that's happening right now, you can see it everywhere. There's an awareness, there's a new renaissance on. They've tried to oppress us, these dark forces, you know, and I'm not really into the religious aspect of that, but they've been with us a long time, and they're our challenge, and they've done their best to keep us out from growing and evolving as spiritual beings. So basically, the scientific interview, and Rudolf Steiner back in the mid-1800s wrote some great work. And you know, amazingly, while I was in the middle of preparing my conference talk, someone sent me this work of Rudolf Steiner, and I was trying, and it really crystallized a lot of what I've known, is that the scientific belief system was really foistered on us to separate us from spirit and reason, intellect and reason. So when you totally look at, with all you'd look at is empirical data through five senses, nothing else exists, it put us into a trap. And that's really, and I'm a science fan, don't get me wrong, I'm not trashing science per se. There's a great need for empiricism and reason, but it has to be balanced with our other intuition, our psychic abilities, our psychic senses, our astral vision, all that. When we balance it out, then we're able to see the downside of thinking that there is no soul. You know, so science says you can't prove anything to me. You can't prove there's a soul. You can't prove any of these exists. But that's all trapped within the three-dimensional matrix. But we're not beings of the three-dimensional matrix.
No, that's the most important thing for us to catch on to, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's what I'm trying to say, is when taking charge of our mass reality as conscious beings who take responsibility for what we do and our thoughts and our beliefs and how we view the world is number one on the list. And we're actually doing that. I mean, you're seeing it everywhere.
I'm practicing.
And boy, are the... Yeah, well, I mean, your classic example, what you do is an intuitive. Look at the difference between what the last 20 years has changed in thinking among
Oh,
human
wow.
beings.
Yeah, terrific. You know, I want to say something before we end this, which is how then, because I remember you speaking about how in your property, which is pristinely in nature and so on, how the number of animals and birds and so on and plants have been reduced, but you've got some really good advice on how you're going to see if you can refresh that relationship with possibility.
Where I live here, I live in the Spokane Valley, and the Spokane Valley, you know, they had the great Missoula floods, which actually carved the basalt away, and I live on the top of this granite rock that overlooks the valley, and it's just a total power spot. It found me, I didn't find it, and I've always felt blessed to live here.
Mm.
And I mean, it was like being in a Bambi movie forever. I mean, every kind of creature. I only live about a quarter mile from a wildlife refuge, and everything thrived. Insects. I mean, one of the best bird watching spots in the world, just clouds of birds and migratory birds and insects and ants and moths and bees and squirrels and all kinds of predator birds and hawks and peregrine falcons. And I mean, just there were some days I'd have swear I was in a Bambi movie, because the bunny rabbits playing and the squirrels and the quail, just constant, just thick wildlife all the time. Well, about 4 years ago, the chemtrail assault. And the other thing is, we live right under the air lanes, the Western air lanes, so it's constant airplanes going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, I started seeing the chemtrails, and I just psychically in every other way knew it was an assault. And so over the last 4 years, as I've recorded this and I've documented it and I've studied it, I've watched the wildlife every year has just gone away. It's disappeared. I don't have hardly an ant in my yard.
Wow, that's
terrible. You know, I mean, when ants, I've seen 2 honeybees in 3 years.
Hmm.
You know, and there's other places where I've found some bees, but man, I mean, in my spot right here, it is just, we're directly into the chemtrail assault, and it's just killed off everything. And it's not because of the toxins, it's because they're interfering with the life force generating mechanism. They kill cumulus cloud formation, and that cumulus cloud formation reacting in the dielectric medium, which is the longitudinal wave propagation, actually generates the argon that settles to the earth, and it's there, and it gets absorbed by water, it gets absorbed by the earth, and the thicker that life force energy field is, the better nature works. And so they're assaulting it. They're literally interfering with that life-generating argon prana process that is killing the wildlife in my yard, and it's killing the people, too, and it's just so offends me. And the reason I know it is because I can see Oregon. I can see the light. I can see auroras. I've had my whole life, some days better than others. But when I'm tuned in, I can see this life process in action. And that's why I know how it works. You know, and it's the spirit. You know, I've been guided my whole life to the right material. That's why I was reading Reich when I was 13, when there were no Reich books available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here, I had this...
Because you knew, you had the wisdom in there.
Well, I don't know if wisdom, but I sure have learned some things, you know.
Mm-hmm. So before we end, I know that you have plans to reestablish this balance, don't you?
Yeah, well, and there's two ways. I've learned that there's fairly simple technological means to enhance the life force energy, and that's what I've learned with the Lakovsky machine, and that was even something that came down through the spirit. And so I've learned that there's a simple technologies we could make to where we could actually counter the balance, we could help repair the dielectric medium, the universal medium, or the atmosphere, which is a dielectric medium, which is all this longitudinal energy that the sun and earth provide for us to generate this. We could actually start doing some repair to it and start countering some of the assault.
And we could recreate or rebuild the life force? We can do that?
Yeah, well, we can help the atmosphere and start rebuilding the life force, because it's actually how a Lakovsky machine works. When you get in it, you're actually creating the electrical dielectric. It's a scalar wave generator, and you get in the thing, and it works in a scalar process at high voltage and high frequencies. It actually build the life force energy right around you, and that's why people heal from it. It, your cells absorb that energy, then your body heals itself. And we could start doing that, and we could all, because it attaches, it literally connects right to the ionosphere through scalar wave propagation. And once you start doing that, and there's ways to put healthy frequencies on, like the Fallagio frequencies would be good, earth resonant frequencies, and learning how to modulate these things properly, you could start to restore a lot of the earth-generating, life force-generating mechanisms. And I've been working on the design of that, and if we spread it around the country, and we did it as in teamwork and actually started doing these things, we could repair a lot of the stuff.
Maybe surreptitiously, you know, really, so it doesn't get interfered with, right?
Yeah, well, that's the downside, is someone's going to try to, you know, the bad guys are going to try to stop it. But, you know, to me, but the most important thing is we can also do that with our minds, our hearts, our souls, and our reality-creating abilities as reality creators.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something
that
can't be stopped.
No. That's wonderful. And,
so
and we can actually, with our minds and hearts and souls, we can regenerate some life force too, can't we?
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because once we take, because we fully have the powers of transmutation, materialization, we're fully telepathic, we can see and understand and interact with all the other life force, and we can literally become, we affect the atmosphere, and when we affect the atmosphere more consciously and more aware and with more love and courage, when we start being affected by the negative forces, you know, we have love, empathy, courage, and then there's hate, jealousy, you know, all these other things that we can fall into the trap of. When we start realizing that and start taking control of ourselves as reality creators, there's no stopping us. And that's happening right now. That's why we're in this tipping point. That's why we're on the way to the Renaissance. That's why we haven't blown ourselves up. There's
and when we do turn those things around, it is love, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Number one is love. Love and courage, man. I mean, even your worst, you know, even the guys that are doing this, I try not to fall in the trap of hatred and all the greed and all the, you know, falling into the low vibration trap, you know. And it's just humor and love fixes those guys. Nothing disarms a sociopath or a psychopath like laughter and love.
Anyway,
I've had a lot of psychopath training in life. When you fall into the trap of reacting the way their game is to, you know, to use those low energy vibrations of greed and hatred and deceit, they throw those at you. If you fall into the trap and react with that same energy back to them, you've lost. But when you laugh at them,
and respect it,
use love, and you use spiritual knowledge, and you convey spiritual knowledge based in love, and you actually say, "I love you," no matter what kind of cretin you are, it just totally blows their game, right? And that's what we need to do in mass and individually. And you can see a lot of that happening now, right? And that's why I try to never fall in that trap. You know,
oh, yeah.
I know who these guys are.
Well, this is so great information, and we have to say goodbye for now. But I wonder if you'd come back on, and we'll take chapter two soon.
Any time. I'm more than happy. Like I said in my talk at the energy conference, I'm stepping out and doing the whole spectrum me. I can't separate any of what I know about science, learning, technology, spirituality, how I understand the earth and nature, what I've learned from native cultures. It's going to be the full spectrum me, and I'm glad to share it with the world anytime.
Good for you. What's your website or something so people can get hold of you? And you also have a DVD called Universal Medium, right?
Right. And I've got like 5 or 6 videos I've published in eMedia Press with Aaron Murakami, and my website is www.paulmariobabcock.com.
Paul
and I haven't
Mario
done much
Babcock.
With it in the last, yeah, paulmariobabcock.com. And I haven't done much with it, but I'm going to be blogging a lot more and posting a lot more stuff and showing how people to make and throwing on some of my theories and you know, helping people build Lakowski machines and how to find health and wellness and, you know, take on the challenge of taking on the bad guys with love and courage and take charge of their life and your belief system and become a fully conscious reality creator and really realize what power you really have.
Wow.
You know, feelings of helplessness, you know, like I say, there's nothing more, you know, the most destructive force in the universe is self-pity, followed by victimhood and all that other stuff that we've been trained to think is, you know, not to fall into those traps.
I really appreciate the time you've spent with us, and I just bless all that you're sharing with us. You're a true paradigm shifter. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening to A Paradigm Shifter on Paradigm Shifters, and many blessings to everyone. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. It's been a joy.
Yeah, for me too. And I really honor all you're doing. Wow.